Welcome to episode 323 of Fly Away. Here at Outlander Travel, we're passionate about, well, travel. Throughout the years, we've seen many changes to the industry, but one thing that has stayed the same is the urge to explore our world and make the connections that can only be made through experience. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Lindsay, George, and a special warm welcome back to Laura. Yay! One of the surprising benefits to this crazy year has been the recommendation that we go outside more. Combine that with the options for domestic travel, and it's no wonder that national parks have been so popular. Travel and Leisure recently published an article on mistakes to avoid when visiting, and we couldn't agree more. So we wanted to go through their suggestions and add a few of our own. So let's get started. I mean, my first suggestion is don't leave a giant monolith behind. That's the first one. Super important. Only aliens are allowed to do that.
It was aliens.
I think it was alien survey markers, you know, when you see the guys out surveying.
Yeah. Is this the spot in the show where I insert the X-Files theme?
Yes, exactly. That would be perfect. So, okay, so I have a list of bullet points here because you guys know that I know almost nothing about national parks, which is not true. I've been to several national parks that are very lovely.
Some good ones, yeah.
I have been. I like the ones where I don't have to camp. So the first big one, and I have to agree with this, is not planning ahead. So can you guys talk a little bit about why this is a bullet point? You're just going to the park, right? Like, how much do you have to plan?
A lot of people probably think that. Like, just camping. It's just camping. How do you plan for camping?
Yeah. Or not even camping. It's just visiting. It's just the outdoors. It's just, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think really that bullet point could probably be for all of travel, but especially for the national parks. You know, it's we don't know about the weather conditions. You don't know about animals crossing. You don't know about what time of year it'll be. You don't know about, and there are some, you know, I've planned a good amount of national parks at this point, and a lot of people will call me in May, and they are adamant they want to stay in the national parks and go in June.
Or 4th of July.
Yeah. And you're like, June next year, right?
Yeah. And as a general rule, I mean, there are some exceptions, but as a general rule, a year ahead of time. And use a travel agent. Because, you know, I know there are like Facebook groups and all that kind of stuff, but they're recommending places that have not always been vetted and that you're not absolutely sure of being let in the park in addition to being able to stay there. So I would say a year ahead. And some places now that our travel is a little restricted, you might even be smart to be more than a year ahead. So,
well, and it helps too to know what you need to bring with you, especially if you're camping. But you know, like we've stayed, I talk about Yosemite a lot, but the two times I went to Yosemite, we had to, like, one of the times we had to bring our own sleeping bags, you know, one of the times we rented it from there. One of the times we needed to know, you know, if we should bring firewood. I mean, there's so many things that you need to think about.
Well, and there's, you know, I'm sure that we'll hit this later on, but there's, you hate to go and have, you know, that, oh my gosh, if we had just come a week later, we could have seen this, or we could have done this, or we could. That's when the, you know, elks would have been in season, or that's when we could have taken the really cool, you know, snow tracker through and seen the wolves, or so that's another reason to plan ahead. So,
and I think another tip there, if you're listening to this going, but I don't want to plan, I just want to go and enjoy, you can think about small group and group travel, because that's actually one way that if you don't plan far enough ahead and you're willing to pay, then if going with a group sometimes can let you stay in the parks because they've taken out group space. So they have some accommodations. Now, right now, it is harder to book that because groups are much smaller right now because they have to be with social distancing. So you do still need to plan ahead, but you will have somebody then taking you from place to place, which eliminates the which way do I hold the map, which I know is old fashioned, which way do I hold the GPS on my phone. But sometimes out there, there's no signal. So you're also, you know, you got to know where you're going. You might want to have a paper map as backup.
And you drain your phone battery.
Yeah. So letting somebody else do the driving, even if you're not normally a group tour kind of person, and a lot of these group itineraries, you can knock out like 6 parks. Like they really knock them out. And so, they do it in a way where you really get to see the highlights. So you're not necessarily being whisked through at 90 miles an hour. You are enjoying those parks. It's just that you're not spending any time figuring out where you're going to go next and figuring out where the hiking trail is and figuring that, you know, somebody else is taking care of that for you. So.
Well, and, you know, a lot of times people will look at, let's take the parks that are like in Utah, and they'll look at it and they'll say, oh, it's just 100 and some miles. And it's like, that's what we were just talking about Italy. It's like saying that about Italy. It's like, so it's 100 and some miles through wiggles and waggles and, mm-hmm. and
35 mile an hour roads.
Yeah. Yes. So it's plan ahead. And yeah. I think the thing about you were saying too about the small group tours is that, you know, even if you're doing a very small group tour, like your family of 8 or 10, you know, they know where to go to get the best views to help. That if you're not finding animals at one place, they know, look, we'll come back here. Let's go here instead of you trying to kind of figure that out on your own. So, and it's not, you know, everyone thinks that those kind of tours are going to be financially not as kind to your pocketbook, but oftentimes if you're going all the way out there, you know, there's all different levels and all different, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I just booked a family to Moab recently, and we had a large discussion about, that's in Utah, if you don't know where Arches National Park is. And we had a long discussion because they wanted to fly into Las Vegas because it was so much cheaper than Salt Lake City. And I'm uh-huh. like, it's much, much further away, like 4 hours instead of 2 hours. Like it's a huge difference. So actually it might've been 6 hours instead of 4 hours, I think. So yeah, big, big difference. It's a big state. Yeah, all that stuff is not really close together, so for sure.
Well, and it's like the Grand Canyon. People are like, oh, there's this entrance, and there's that entrance, and there's this entrance. Like, do you know which entrance is the best entrance to go and for what you want to see? It doesn't look the same all the way around. It's a pretty big place. That canyon of it is a pretty big place.
Yep, yep. And it's not easy to get to each of those. You know, you pick one, pretty much, or maybe two that you can go to. So, yeah. So with that, let's talk about sort of enjoying the ride. I think that a lot of times people, because they didn't plan, have to stay face down. So talk about some of these. There's some, I don't want to just say them because then there's nothing to talk about, but some of the things that people miss when they're exploring the national parks.
Well, one of the things we did, and you know, somebody they had a paper that they gave out. I guess it was a weekly one. It was like, every week they'd give a new one, and it had like all the events kind of listed, their recommendations on things to see, where the ranger talks were going to be, that kind of thing. And, you know, like going up to, I forget the name of this one point, but basically you drive on this switchback road for like close to an hour, it was like 45 minutes to get to the top. And if you get there, sunset, then it's supposed to be like really spectacular views and colors. And you know, the night we went up, it was very clear, and apparently the colors show a lot better when it's cloudy, but it was still gorgeous, and the, you know, amazing view of Half Dome. There was a ranger up there talking about the history of the park. So things like that just to me add so much to your trip. But and one thing about that's the switchback roads, that they were kind of scary to drive off.
So you're saying you wouldn't have known about that if you hadn't been paying attention to this paper?
Oh yeah, I mean, I totally wouldn't have. And you know, some of the people we were with didn't really know about it, you know. So yeah,
I guess a lot.
Yeah, go to the visitor center, pick up the paper.
Well, that's a big thing right there, is a lot of people miss going to the visitor center.
Yeah,
you know, and asking kind of the experts. Mm-hmm. You know, what it's like when you go to a small town when you're traveling and you just ask somebody there, what's the best restaurant in town? You know, at the national parks, you know, you're saying, where would you go today? What would you see today? And they actually have a junior ranger program, mm-hmm. for kids. And I recommend that adults do it too. because it's really cool.
Anytime there's a ranger talking, and anytime there's a professional, it really adds to your trip. I've never done a trip inside a national park, but I've done day tours. And without an expert, I wouldn't know what I was looking at or what the significance of the history was. And we've talked about this with other destinations too. I mean, you could spend a million years reading a guidebook, but there's just something about having someone explain it to you that knows the ins and outs.
Yeah, those park rangers are no joke. They really know. I mean, they know history that you wouldn't. You're like, oh, I don't need somebody to tell me about the rocks. They'll tell you way more than about the rocks. They can tell you how the park was discovered, quote, discovered, and what the process was for it becoming a national park. I mean, it's like they can tell you the science, but they can also tell you the history. And it's really fascinating.
And kind of the story of being a ranger and what they've seen and you know what they've experienced and what they've, you know, that whole piece is. And I remember, you know, I grew up camping. It's what my family did, and I lived in upstate New York, and we spent probably 2 weeks one summer camping in Canada and up in Ontario, and my dad was having us go to the ranger station. You know, I got a big education on loons, and I can still remember, and I probably 10, 11, but I still remember. And my dad loved the loons, and he loved the way they called. And I, you know, when he passed away, those are the times I remembered from him, was sitting and listening to the ranger, and the ranger being, you know, the other thing is, this goes right back to plan ahead, is, you know, you need to heed the wisdom of the ranger. Because no matter how smart you are, he do know what he's talking about. You know? And he told us to, you know, not keep any food, and, you know, or string it up high. And we were camping, and they had my sister and I in a pup tent, and my dad and mom, my younger brother and sister, in a big 6-man tent. And they heard something rustling, and my dad and all his birthday suit went out to shoo away the raccoon, and there was a black bear on its hind legs with our graham crackers in one hand and our raisins in the other. And my dad,
are raisins poisonous, you know, to bears like they are to dogs?
No, nothing is poisonous to bears. My dad let out an expletive, you know, that caused everybody to turn their flashlights on, so now all the flashlights are pointed at my. And once he, you know, ate what was in his hands, he went over to the people said they thought they were being smart, so they put their coolers and stuff in their car, and he was rocking. The bear was rocking a station wagon back and forth.
Yeah,
you know, because everybody thinks they knew best. So heed the wisdom. Heed the wisdom of those rangers.
They have videos at Yosemite when you're checking in of bears like putting their claws in the groove where the door shuts and just peeling
it like a can opener.
Peeling open the car. They said don't put anything, like no shampoo, anything they could possibly smell or even see, because if they see it, they're going to think it's something. And yeah, they were they're very strict nowadays, at least at Yosemite, about bear boxes and stuff. So, yeah, they have like these, it's almost like a big metal safe, and you have to get a lock. Even the dumpsters have these weird handles that you have to reach your hand in and push up, and then it like releases a latch, and yeah, but the bears figure it out if they don't. So,
well, and you know, although some would argue, because it's kind of been longer than we thought it would be with our current health status, but you know, those times with your family, I think, are precious time. You know, they're times of exploring and appreciating and being quiet and just, you know, our family was young enough on that same trip that my brother was like, he must have been like yet less than a year. So he would have been like less than a year. My sister would have been like 2. And then I would have been 9, and my other sister was 7. So our whole family could fit in one canoe, you know, and we would take out a canoe, you know, with my dad in the back and my mom in the front, and, you know, paddle and then pull over at lunchtime, and the kids would get out and splash around. And you know, I can close my eyes and be right there. Right there, the sun shining, the, you know, it's beautiful. You know, I'm not advocating going to Ontario or Canada, although they have beautiful national parks also. I mean, that's worth us mentioning, because hopefully there'll be a point when we can travel back there again. But, you know, I remember as a child, just, you know, the lily pads and the frogs and the sunsets and the learning and the, you know, my dad was a nature enthusiast. So he had to, everything was a lesson. And so I think some of those things are, you know, the question you're asking is, what might people miss? It's, I think we miss some of those moments if we don't kind of slow down and, you know, be
pull
in
your
that
face
moment,
out
so.
Of your phone. Or
I
your
think
camera.
Another thing, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. People do this. They do this at concerts too. This is a pet peeve of mine, where they're so busy filming it, they're not watching it.
And
you know,
then they're watching it through their little phone screen, which is nowhere near as amazing as watching it there live in person. And it can be said of, like, not just concerts, but every single place that you travel. It's one of the reasons why I scaled back on my photography so much, is because I felt like I had to find a balance of enjoying it, and you want to capture some memories. Yeah, but the memories, like Laura was saying, that you're going to keep forever, that you're going to close your eyes and see later on 20, 30, 40 years down the line, you know, even if your hard drive crashes, are the ones you're experiencing while you're there. So.
Yeah. And I think the national parks kind of call us to be fully present for a lot of reasons. You have to kind of be on your,
well, for bears,
you have to be aware. Yeah. You have to be aware. You have to be aware. And that's one of the, you know, we're talking about mistakes, but I think that's, you know, but you have to be fully aware.
You never know where
you're
going to come out of the bathroom.
I think one of the mistakes is...
Or your tent.
That just happened. I think one of the mistakes people make with their cameras or their phones is trying to get that Instagrammable shot, you know, to prove that they were there rather than to experience it while they are there. Yeah. So, yeah, I would call that a mistake.
And although we're not trying to take George's camera away. He's over there. He looks very concerned.
No, but George is not doing death-defying things for Instagram.
I couldn't see George hanging
but also, I
trying
think...
to bait a bear with donuts or anything like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's on his to-do list for tomorrow. But I do think, too, that a key thing to remember, too, because the national parks are so beautiful, you're going to be tempted to take a lot of landscape pictures or a lot, but don't forget to take pictures of the people you're with too. And we've talked about this before. You don't want to come back with a bunch of pictures of the beautiful landscape, but no memories of the people that were there with you to take home with you. So just be sure that if you are using that camera, that yes, you're capturing the beauty of the landscape and of what you're seeing, but that you're also documenting the people that you were enjoying it with. Because like what Laura was saying is so true. I think we all probably have those memories of, you know, when we were little, those family vacations, wherever they were, whether they were national parks or anywhere. And it's so important to document that
and
as well.
Yeah. And with a foot in the other world of that, Elizabeth, it's, yes, get people in it, but don't be silly trying to get people in it. Don't deface where you are. Don't stand at the edge of the Grand Canyon where you're going to try and take a funny shot. You know, just be smart about that also. So,
and Sandy kind of talked about it, about going up one of your stories about going up on the clear night. But I think we should really highlight, and Elizabeth, I'm thinking about you, staying up later than you maybe normally would to see the stars, or getting up earlier than you normally would to see the sunrise. Because if you're there and you miss those things, like if you don't stay up and see the northern lights at least once, or if you count on just doing it one time and then you miss the opportunity because you didn't, you know, it wasn't the best visibility that night, you didn't have another chance to do it. If you miss those moments, they're gone. And you can't get them back. And
well, I guess that's one good thing about camping, is if you make me sleep on the ground, I'll be awake all night. So.
Just stare at the stars anyway.
Exactly. Although I will say that I do agree with you. And I do think that when, you know, you can tease me all you want, but when it's important to stay up late, I certainly can do it 100%. And I have done it. And I actually remember being in Africa, seeing the stars. I've never seen so many stars in my life. So, and that's probably because I haven't camped in the national parks, or parked in the national camps for that matter. So,
yeah, but in Africa, you were looking at like a different, totally different sky, you know?
Different sky, yeah, but still billions and billions of shiny balls like, of gas.
Could you see your constellations and stuff? Do you?
I don't know. I cannot. Whoever came up with those is crazy, because seriously, I have no idea how to see those. But
there is an app.
Actually, we have a future plan to have an astronomer on the show, hopefully, and he can talk about that. But I agree with you. I do think, and even like when I was just in Mexico, I went to bed really early, but I did. I mean, really, yeah, early. But I also got up kind of early to see the sunrise. So, you know. Do both. Of course, the sunrise is, I mean, that you had to do it early. You couldn't do it at night because the sunset wasn't as pretty because it's the other side. But anywho, so let's talk a little bit about what you were alluding to, Laura, with the and Sandy with the Instagrammable moments and leaning off the cliff, because I think that's something that people laugh about, but they still do it sort of with this thought of, oh, well, it doesn't pertain to me. So the Grand Canyon statistics on the number of people who fall because they're taking a picture is alarming. Like, it's a large number of people every year who, and they all went to the edge of the cliff thinking that they weren't going to fall. Like, mm-hmm. that's very yes. normal. So some of the other things people do, straying from the path, you want to talk about that a little bit and what that can lead to?
That can lead to you having to go bushwhacking to find the trail. well, that goes back to, you know, don't use your phone as a compass, because what if your phone dies? Or, you know, the cell service might not be good. So if you do get lost, maybe you can't call for help. Or if you can call for help, you can't tell them where you are. Wow. And they can't narrow it down. There's a lot of reasons to make sure. I mean, it just goes to that being prepared thing. Like, if you want to hike, you know, any of the big trails, you know, they have things in the guidebooks that tell you how long the trails are and how strenuous they are. And so you have to plan for that, you know, bring water, bring food, you know, bring the stuff you're going to need, bring a flashlight. You know, what happens if it takes longer than you thought and it's dark, you know, and then you can't see the trail? I mean, are you going to use your cell phone for a flashlight? No, because it's going to die. So,
Now, you know, that being said, we're travel agents, and we're all of us are explorers and adventurers, and we want you to, you know, we want you to go off the beaten path, so per se. What, you know, Sandy's saying is, you know, be smart, be safe. This mm-hmm. is the national parks is not one of those places to go off the beaten path, mm-hmm. to go rogue, you know. Right. And once again, kind of, you know, I was talking before about some people say to me, but it's only 106 miles or whatever. It looks like, oh, if we just go this way, it'll be really cool. And all of a sudden, oh, good golly.
You know, you're at the Shining Hotel.
Yeah.
And you're,
and you're stuck there. I live in Washington State, and I think what you hit on with the being prepared is so every year, every single year, we have in the news countless cases of people who went for a hike unprepared mm-hmm. and got lost, to the point of where I almost think you should be required to wear some type of little tile tracking chip or something. Everybody should have like a little tracking beacon right. in their clothes or something so you can find them, because I mean, it's, you're talking a thousands of manpower hours, and that's if they're lucky mm-hmm. enough to find you and save you. The manpower that's involved yeah. in those search and rescues is not. And I don't know.
Wait, we are really inspiring people to get out there and go to national parks.
Get out there prepared.
But that's only if you go off the trail, right? Yeah.
You know,
right.
This is why you want to plan, and you want to enjoy your time there. You don't.
I think, honestly, Laura,
sometimes people need to be a little more scared, because like she was talking about the statistics for the people falling up the Grand Canyon. I would have never thought that would be that big of an issue, because there's a ledge and you wouldn't think you'd go that close,
and people are smart, right?
To the ledge.
But there isn't a ledge everywhere.
I think people get a false sense of security, you know, like mm-hmm. they think, well, nobody thinks something's gonna happen like that to you on vacation, but yeah, people just they don't think mm-hmm. ahead, you know, like they're not.
I mean, we saw people at the Cliffs of Moher in Ireland climbing over the thing to get with mudslide warning, big mudslide signs everywhere, climbing over to get a better picture. Yeah.
And the statistics there are pretty significant too. The wind picks people up and throws them over the cliff. I mean, like, it's serious stuff. Not so, but I do think that's the, it's the, you want that picture, but you don't need to be crazy about it. You don't need to be stupid about it. It's the same when you see a bear, it's not time for you to get an actual physical close up of the bear with your camera. It's time for you to exit the premises. You know, it's
there are signs that say do not feed the bears, and there's a reason for that sign.
Yes. I mean, it's not joking, and it can happen to you. And I mean, the same thing could be said for people who crawl into tiger cages. I mean, we've all heard of these stories happening. It happens, but be smarter than that. Be a good, smart traveler and follow the rules, because they are there for a reason.
Yeah, this Always. Isn't exactly a national park, but I had one of my clients who went on a biking trip in Alaska. And as it turns out, he and his wife were the only ones on the trip. And I said, how were the bikes and everything? And he said, well, it was disconcerting when the guides started to say, now this is your bear bell.
That would have been the end of the trip for me.
He said, I laughed at him. I laughed at him. And he said, no, listen to me. This is your bear bell.
Well, and I think with bears, I mean, you said Alaska. I was at Denali, and some of you have been to Denali. That's a national park. And the moose. Yep. And people think, oh, moose, they're so gentle and easygoing. No, they're really freaking huge. And when they get angry, they will gut you.
You want something to clean you in a minute.
Yeah, that's
if they're giving birth. Like, those are really dangerous times. Yeah. Everyone thinks, oh, the baby moose.
The babies are nearby.
I keep wanting to say baby meese.
Yeah, they're not beanie babies. They're real.
Yeah, they're real. And the baby moose probably isn't as much of a threat to you, but that mama moose.
The mama moose.
Clean your clock.
Trying to get close to the pictures, and the mama's like, this is not.
Yeah,
not gonna happen.
So I think that interacting with wildlife, it's, you know, there are people here who think raccoons are really cute and might actually come up to one, but don't be that guy. Like, don't be that guy. They are really cute from a distance, and watch them eat whatever food you left out for them, but don't interact with them. It's going to end badly. And it's not just going to end badly for you, but it could end badly for some of the people around you as well. So.
And the animals, ultimately, because what gets them euthanized.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You leave your food out and the bears get it and they start coming around people, they get, there's no good home for them to send them to. It's not a reason.
Well, let's face it, the food that you brought is not good for you. It's certainly not good for the bears. So.
Well,
they just eat a bagel, like grab the bagel off the chair, eat the whole thing before it ran away.
Poor little squirrel.
It wasn't a little squirrel.
It was like the size of a puppy.
Yeah, it was a little chubby Jewish squirrel.
We have some massive sized squirrels here that are like the size of cat, like house cats.
There used to be a slogan that was on a lot of parks, especially national parks, and there was two variations of it. One was take only pictures, leave only footprints, mm-hmm. or take only memories, leave only footprints. And I think even when you're taking those pictures, it's like we're all going to lean against a tree, or we're all going to do this. And just be careful in those pieces also. It's that you're not dissettling somebody's habitat, that you're, you know, this is not the place to carve your initials in the tree in the national forest or that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
I just think that's smart.
We're definitely in a world. I mean, one of the beautiful things about a national park is it gets you out of the day-to-day like noise that you're used to. And you were talking about presence. It's so important.
Yeah.
So we interact with, you know, our whole lives. We're pushing buttons on a phone or, you know, pushing buttons on a keyboard or, you know, if you live in a city, then you've just got this stimulation all the time, watching television and doing all that. And just to go and be quiet for a minute, it's kind of foreign, but you have to remember that you don't behave there the way that you behave at home. You know, you have to respect the space and not necessarily, you know, you don't have to touch every rock. You don't have to push the boulders over that have been standing for, you know, and eroding on their own for decades. This is the place where you let earth be earth and you do those things. You're there to observe. You're not there to mess things up.
Well, and even, you know, in the kind of the times that we're in right now where people are doing a lot more hiking, some people are doing that solo, and where that's a great thing for them to do that solo. Once again, it's not always a great thing to hike solo, and especially in the national parks, especially in the, or, you know, really kind of anywhere where you're unfamiliar, but especially in the national parks, It's a good time to even if you're going to keep social, you know, socially distanced, bring somebody with you, have somebody else there, you know,
and also let people know who aren't with you, what your plan is, when you're planning to be back, you know, where you're planning to be, that kind of thing. So if something does happen, they at least have a starting point to help try to find you.
Fill your gas tank. We sound again, like somebody's worried.
Yeah. This is my, these are all the ways you could die podcast. My kids are right. Gonna love this.
Well, I mean, it was about mistakes. And actually that bullet point has been looking at me. I'm like, we do need to talk about that because I think, I mean, Sandy, I think you wrote these show notes, right?
Yes.
Can you say why you put not filling up your gas tank on this list? I mean, can you talk about that a little bit?
So going back to Yosemite as an example, but even like, you know, this summer when I was in the National Forest off of the Blue Ridge Parkway, the Pisgah National Forest, there's not gas stations around. So when you go into Yosemite, you pass through, if you're coming from the south, you pass through this like cute little town, and then you get to the gates of Yosemite, and then you have like, I think it's like an hour maybe drive to Yosemite Valley on those windy roads. There are gas stations in Yosemite Valley. You know, like you need to have filled up before you get in there, because anything you want to do in the park, you might be driving an hour to 90 minutes one way to get to, you know, the Sequoia Grove or, you know, it, like anything you want to see. And yeah, you're going to need.
Well, and I have a really good friend who's a, kind of a friend of this podcast, who a name I'm not going to mention, but he's a pilot, and for a large airline, he's a big adventure outdoor guy. He probably travels as much as he works. He's constantly exploring. He could probably run circles around all of us in terms of his travel experiences. And about back in the spring, he and his husband were coming across from Oregon to Montana, and they were going to go to Glacier National Park. And maybe it was in the summer, early summer. And I said, you know, that's not always the best idea right now because there are some road closures. And he said to me, he calls me the girl next door. He said, girl next door, I've planned thousands of trips. We've got it all mapped out. We know exactly where we're going. We know exactly where we're staying. And I said, what entrance are you going in? Girl next door. Now he's, you know, he's smart out the wazoo. I'm just going to leave that boy alone. 2 days later, I get a sheepish phone call. How is Glacier National Park? You were right. And we almost ran out of gas because they drove all the way there and everything was shut down because those roads are shut down because they're working in Glacier National Park. Those roads are shut down. Before any of COVID came along, there were plans for that road to be shut down. You know, so it's like another, it's like you don't know if you don't plan ahead or if you don't use a travel agent who's spending all their time learning about these things, you know, it's best to be smart about that kind of thing. So
yeah.
You know, he ate his words sheepishly. And I was like, you know, this travel agent gig's working out for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's good to say, I mean, it's kind of fun to see people turning to travel agents for national parks, because for a long time, it was a lot of, oh, it's just the national parks. I can do it myself. But now, and especially with COVID, people are nervous to do it themselves. And that might actually be a good thing to have somebody in your corner, you know, sort of advocating for you and helping you figure out which roads are closed or what the best way is for you to travel. Because like we talked about group travel before, and I do harp on it because I really like group travel. But it may be that you would have never thought of that because you have preconceived notions about what that's like, but it may actually be the perfect way for you to experience the parks without having to do all the thinking and planning and plotting that might be necessary if you were going to camp, if you were going to have to figure out what supplies you need for the week. Mm-hmm. So it could be a much easier alternative for you. So talk, one last bullet point that we have here is going, one mistake people make is when they go. So can you talk a little bit about seasons in these parks?
Well if you go in the summer, it's crowded. So go ahead, Laura. Sorry.
go ahead, Sandy.
I was just going to say it's very crowded. And from what I've heard, you know, I don't know why I keep harping on Yosemite, but even, you know, we were close to the Great Smoky Mountain National Park this summer, and we were doing like the natural water slides and the waterfalls and stuff. And it was crowded when we drove in there. And so I would have rather have gone maybe in the spring, whenever, you know, maybe people, there weren't quite so many people there. I think everybody kind of had our idea this summer and one, you know, was doing this outdoor thing. But even at Yosemite now, I mean, the photo that I posted for the podcast this week is a picture of people climbing Half Dome. And I took it in like 2007. Now you have to get a permit to climb Half Dome and to hike it. So hopefully it's not quite like that anymore. but I just thought that was so funny because it's such a, like a hard hike. It's like an 8 hour, you have to start before the sun comes up and you have to bring, you know, like a gallon of water per person and all this stuff. And it's not an easy trail. It's strenuous. It's going up mountains and stuff. And so the fact that so many people can get up there was amazing to me. But
I think, you know, it's, you know, I've talked a little bit about it. We've been doing some training in Italy, and the guys who's been doing the training for us will say, if you go in the winter, you have this experience. And if you go in the summer, you have this experience. And with the national parks, I think people don't often think about it during the winter. Mm-hmm. I do think, especially if you're going to go, I'd say anytime after September, well, really anytime after the end of August, mm-hmm. you know, to the beginning of May, to some of the places that we're talking about in Montana, in Utah, use a travel agent. Mm-hmm. He's a travel agent, and you're going to get a really different, really unique experience. There's opportunities for things that would have, you know, to see Yosemite, to see Yellowstone in the snow is really, and to see the different animals, and to see the stars in the winter. Holy, you know, you think someone just turned on the best Christmas lights you've ever seen in your whole life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that was not in our bullet points, but I hope you don't mind if I mention, is, you know, that there are areas of our world now called dark skies. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes our national parks are part of that. And you have to be, it has to, when you just can't say, oh, those are dark skies. You know, it's a, what's the wording I'm looking for? It's a
designated.
It's designated. Yeah. And there's a list of things that have to happen. And part of it is you have to be so far away from so many lights and everything. But the star viewing there is out of this world, out of this world. And the quiet and the air quality is incredible. I mean, it's just amazing. And so, you know, I would almost recommend to folks, you know, you might want to see the national parks twice, you know, each national park twice and mm-hmm. see it during different seasons, because you're going to have very, very different experiences. And it's something that you can tie in with another vacation, but especially in the wintertime, as you know, and I say the end of August because it's known to snow, and you know, mm-hmm. very, you know, I mean, I come from upstate New York where we didn't know Halloween without having our snowsuit on underneath our costumes, you know, so it's known to snow, you know, and when it snows in Montana, it don't joke around, mm-hmm. you know, you ain't getting out. So, you know, it's especially prevalent to have somebody on your side who can advocate for, you know, better ways to travel and ways to get you there and that kind of thing. So I just think that's really important.
My Moab clients were going in November, and that was the first thing they said is, oh, well, we can tent camp. It'll be cheaper. I was like, it's going to be really chilly. Is that really? And she was like, oh, I didn't think about that. And, you know, she was from Chicago. But I think you think of Utah desert and, you know, and the red rocks and everything. And you're used to seeing it in the summer. And you just sort of assume that it's like Florida. It's like that all year long. That's actually not true. So
I had planned it was actually an 18-day trip for a family with two boys. A mom and dad and two boys. And, you know, another thing that we had to think about for them was they were going over Christmas. And you know, like everything closes down. So how are we going to get them Christmas dinner? And, you know, it's like the lodges, they ain't serving Christmas morning. So it's those, you know, all those pieces of the puzzle that you have to think about, and the guide services and the, oh, I can't believe I'm forgetting it now. I should have looked it up, but the, I think it's either at Moab or Arches where the river runs through. You can hike in the river. And, you know, the guide services weren't going to be, around, you know, during that time. And so it was really important. Luckily, the dad used to be he's done a lot of climbing on his own, and he's done a lot of guiding on his own. So we could find them somebody else who wasn't experienced between the two of them. They could be okay. But I think it's those kind of things that are important. So
mm-hmm. For sure. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on outlandertravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much to Laura for coming back and chatting with us.
Yay! I love to talk about the national parks. I can just talk forever.
That's why we asked you to come. We knew you would. On behalf of Sandy, George, Lindsay, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly!